Well, it's a pleasure to be here with all of you. I told Dick and Lowell when I came in that it occurs to me this is rather incredible timing, sandwiching me in this talk between the Super Bowl and George Bush's State of the Union address. This is a message of peace sandwiched in between maybe the two biggest forums for violence that we'll experience in the entire year. What I'd like to do is review with you what Physicians for Social Responsibility stands for and works for, some of what led up to my year as president of Physicians for Social Responsibility last year, and some of my experiences dealing with the full onslaught on pretty much everything that we stand for and believe by the administration that's currently in power. Before I start, though, I'd like to remind you, as we talk about ridding Iraq and other rogue nations of weapons of mass destruction, which our media seems to have bought lock, stock, and barrel, that we live here, we sit here, probably 20 miles from the world's greatest concentration of nuclear weapons on the face of the earth, at the Bangor submarine base. As we talk about ridding the world of nuclear weapons, we need to look beyond rogue states. Rogue state is in the eye of the beholder. And think about creating a world that could and will exist without the threat of annihilation of life on Earth as we know it. And that is what nuclear weapons allow and the risk they create. So what is Physicians for Social Responsibility? We are an organization of 23,000-plus physicians, other health professionals, and people who have nothing to do with medicine. About half the organization is physicians. We're physician-led and directed. And our focus is primarily on the three major threats to public health, as we see it, that exist in the world today. One is elimination of weapons of mass destruction. We were founded on this issue back in 1964. We were essentially resurrected from a moribund state when Ronald Reagan was elected in 1982. Some of you probably heard Helen Caldicott when she came through Seattle, energizing the medical community and the community at large about the fact that these nuclear weapons existed on hair trigger alert, pointed at the Soviet Union and the United States, and threatening life on Earth if they were to ever be used. Helen had a very powerful delivery, a beautiful Australian accent to talk about the threats to our children. And many of us remain activated thanks to both Ronald Reagan and his evil empire rhetoric and Helen Caldicott, who offered us an alternative. So the three major areas that we focus on are the elimination of weapons of mass destruction and militarism in general. That's one. A second is environmental threats to public health. So PSR does not work on saving old-growth forests or saving wetlands or endangered species. But we do work on environmental issues with a direct medical consequence. We're talking about global warming, clean air, clean water, pesticides, and other persistent organic pollutants, and sustainable development. And the third area we work on, as Dick mentioned, is interpersonal violence. I've done a lot of work on the violence issue. We sponsor programs in the Seattle schools and also over in Bellevue, which we call Cops and Docs. We have a physician and a police officer go into eighth grade classrooms and educate our kids about the medical and legal consequences of using guns or being around those who might use them and bring them to school. So those are the three major areas that PSR focuses on. Tonight I'm going to focus primarily on the weapons of mass destruction and the related foreign policy issues that contrast PSR's approach to these issues versus those of the current administration in Washington, D.C. Needless to say, we have a contrasting vision of the world as opposed to George Bush, Dick Cheney, and Don Rumsfeld. The Bush administration, as I said, really threatens everything that we value, and so this will be a study in contrast. Leading up to my year as president, which began a year ago, January 1st, and ended at the end of December, as president of National PSR, we had the 9/11 events. We had the Bush response to these events, which was to threaten or guarantee or promise us perpetual war against terrorism. He has been very effective at maintaining a level of fear in the public to allow the kind of military spending, as opposed to spending on other very, very pressing domestic needs. We don't need to go through the litany of education, health care, homeless, infrastructure, et cetera, et cetera. Just as an aside, the increase in the United States defense budget with George Bush's coming to be president over the last Clinton budget was $70 billion. That is larger than the entire defense budget of any other nation on Earth, just the increase with George Bush. It's larger than any other nation on Earth, with the exception of Russia, that has about as big a defense budget as our increase was. So along with the perpetual war standing that George Bush has placed us on, we also saw absolutely no attempt to address the root causes of terrorism. We will just go stamp this evil out, but we won't try to identify what in fact is causing it. The Bush policy on national energy consumption, the national energy policy, is exactly the wrong way for us to deal with our dependence on Middle East oil, which is driving a lot of the current Bush policy on terrorism. There's no increase in corporate fuel economy standards. There's no support whatsoever for renewable energy sources. It's just, Americans, please consume more and more and more, and we'll drill in the Arctic National Refuge and off the coast of California and anywhere else to create profits for the oil company and to keep Americans with a full SUV gas tank. This is really a threat to our national security, and most people don't actually realize that their SUV in their garage or the Bush energy policy is really a national and foreign policy issue. The United States' support for repressive regimes throughout the Persian Gulf and the Middle East is another root cause of terrorism, which directly follows the Middle East oil policy. The stationing of troops in Saudi Arabia is another major source of angst among those who would support terrorists in the Middle East. And finally, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is an ongoing festering sore that the United States has done very little, if anything, and many of us feel has been the major impediment to solving. And as long as the Israeli-Palestinian situation continues and the peoples of both those countries terrorize each other, and their governments encourage the tit-for-tat retaliation, there will be no peace, and there will be a major source of support for Arab fundamentalist terrorism. Now, why aren't we addressing some of these root causes of terrorism? So, my year as president of PSR, one of the first issues that came up was George Bush's State of the Union address exactly 1 year ago. And you all remember that a major bombshell of that State of the Union address was the definition of an axis of evil, composed of Iraq and North Korea and Iran. And these countries were labeled as evil forces in the world. It was then that it became very clear to any American who's willing to look that we had a president who felt that he had a mission, a messianic mission, to stamp out evil in the world for America. Messiahs have served very useful roles in the world, but to elect one as president, I think, is a dangerous precedent. And the differing view of the world by the Republicans in power and the sense of moral righteousness with which they approach foreign policy and their job in general is probably the biggest threat to world peace that exists today. So what came after the Bush State of the Union address? Well, in March 9th, the Los Angeles Times published a leaked copy of the Bush administration's Nuclear Posture Review. This Nuclear Posture Review was another bombshell. It laid out secret plans to develop, test, deploy, and use new nuclear weapons that the Bush administration wanted to develop. It also expanded the list of targets for these weapons from the threesome, the axis of evil, to now a septuplet, including Libya, Syria, China, Russia, and the previous axis. Related to that proposal was a proposal from the Bush administration to fund the preparation of the Nevada weapons test site, nuclear weapons test site, for resumption of nuclear testing within 18 months. Didn't say they were going to start testing, they just wanted to get ready to do so. Now, what was Physicians for Social Responsibility's response to this? The new nuclear weapon had the very interesting moniker of the robust nuclear earth penetrator. Now, can you think of a more male, macho, thrusting name than a robust nuclear earth penetrator? It's enough to bring beads of sweat out in the foreheads of generals just thinking about it. The problem with this weapon is that it blurs the lines between nuclear weapons and conventional weapons. Right now, Congress in 1994 has prohibited the U.S. military from developing weapons with a yield of under 5 kilotons. If you recall, the Hiroshima bomb was about 12 and a half kilotons. So we're talking maybe half the size of a Hiroshima bomb. The administration wants to develop what it calls mini nukes, these robust things, of 1 to 5 megatons, blurring the line somewhat, creating the totally inappropriate impression that you can make nuclear weapons small enough that they're usable. Well, look at what happened to Hiroshima. Imagine if you're burying a weapon half the size of the Hiroshima bomb deep in the earth and blowing it up, the kind of crater you would create, the radioactive dust that would occur. You try to do this in Baghdad and the city would become uninhabitable and the casualties will be unimaginable. So PSR has very actively opposed the robust nuclear earth penetrator. We are extremely proud of the fact that we met with Senator Jack Reed, a Democrat from the state of Rhode Island. He was chair of the Senate committee that had the responsibility for the authorization of funds to build this robust weapon. And we were able to get him to realize that he had to stop it. He had to not fund it. We and he won that battle. It did not get funded this year. But it's an annual battle. The Bush administration is back again with a request this year. Jack Reed is now in the minority in the Senate and will not be able to stop it like he did last year. We will be working hard with liberal Republicans, there's no such thing, I guess, with moderate Republicans, and with Democrats to do all we can to get this thing stopped. What about the idea of preparing the Nevada test site for testing again? The United States has signed the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, but the Senate has not ratified it. So technically, we're not obligated to follow it. However, if we were to start testing nuclear weapons in Nevada again, we would face clearly a situation where Pakistan, India, and China would begin testing again. There would be an exponential increase in the danger of proliferation and modernization and building of new weapons by every country on Earth that could figure out how to do so. Talk about a dumb idea. That's about the dumbest that I've heard of. And we actually had some senators who were able to say that on the floor of the Senate. Finally, we just sponsored a major meeting in London at the Royal Uniform Services Institute, which is the British equivalent of the Army War College and the Navy War College in the United States, on the Nuclear Posture Review. It was sponsored by the Manchester Guardian. It was attended by politicians and nuclear disarmament experts from all over Europe and received wide press. So the rest of the world is well aware of what George Bush is trying to do with this Nuclear Posture Review. It's a huge step in the wrong direction. So what happened next? Well, George Bush wants to build a missile defense system. And in order to do so, he had to abrogate the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, which he did. PSR worked very hard to see if there was any spine in Congress to oppose that move, and basically there was not. So the ABM treaty went into the dustbin of history. The Senate then approved, and Congress then approved, $7 billion to begin the development of a missile defense system. This is the old Reagan bad idea of Star Wars resurrected and modernized. Now, can you imagine what a missile defense system, what kind of impression that would create on a country like China that has probably 20 missiles? It might actually knock out enough of those missiles to make China feel like its nuclear deterrent is no longer a deterrent. What's that going to make China do? Well, China's been watching the tests of this system. It's been tested four or five times. It actually totally failed twice and sort of had a partial success twice in a very, very constrained testing situation. We know that the current status of this system as it's envisioned, there's no way it could possibly work. It's going to be a multi-billion dollar boondoggle. All China or someone else has to do is send up enough Mylar balloons and other flak to deflect this missile, and it'll never find the speeding bullet flying through all that stuff. So what's really behind this missile defense system? Why, if it's so obvious that it won't work and can't work, why does George Bush want to abrogate the ABM treaty? Why is he currently building the first missile site at Fort Greely, Alaska? The answer is, we feel, that missile defense is a subterfuge for something much, much bigger and much, much grander. George Bush wants a missile defense system that is land-based, sea-based, aircraft-based, and space-based. And it's the space basing of national missile defense that concerns us. There is a huge link between missile defense and a newly created organization in the U.S. military called the U.S. Space Command. The U.S. Space Command had a website. I don't know if they took it off the internet or not, but it was very clear on what its mission was. The mission of the U.S. Space Command was to occupy the ultimate high ground, military parlance for obtaining military superiority, not only to occupy the ultimate high ground of space, but to deny it to any other nation. The idea is that the first nation in space with offensive weapons, we're talking killer satellites, will be on the top of the hill. Anybody else who tries to climb that hill will be blasted out of space by the hunter-killer satellites that the U.S. would have up there. The U.S. is also working on top-secret programs to develop all kinds of futuristic weapons to place in space and to use on the battlefield. We're talking laser weapons, microwave-directed weapons, kinetic energy weapons, the ability to zap pretty much anybody at will on Earth if they don't march to the U.S. tune. So missile defense is a lot more than it appears on face value. It appears on face value to be worth zero. But we feel that there's a method to the madness behind missile defense. PSR supports Dennis Kucinich's Space Preservation Act of year 2000. This act, if it were to pass, and it won't with the Republican Congress, if it were to pass, would preserve space for peaceful purposes. The only military use of space would be for surveillance. What was the next issue that confronted us last year as PSR? It was something called the National Security Strategy. This was it came out in May, early June, I think, on a Friday afternoon after the media had all gone home for the weekend. It got almost no media coverage. But we all know what it says. It announced a policy that states the following, that the United States reserves the right to unilaterally attack any nation on Earth that it feels is harboring terrorists and not rooting them out, and that it feels is a rogue state that possesses nuclear weapons. It goes so far as to state the United States is a force for good in the world and can identify evil when it sees it and deserves the right to stamp it out. It says it will try to achieve coalitions of the willing but will act unilaterally if it has to. It says that, quote, U.S. military capabilities must include the ability to defend the homeland, conduct information operations, ensure U.S. access to distant theaters, and protect critical U.S. infrastructure and assets in outer space. Now, that coupled with the U.S. Space Command creation and its mission and the missile defense subterfuge has become very clear to many of us looking at where the Bush administration is going with all this craziness. The Bush administration intends to establish a Pax Americana for the globe. and imposed peace on United States terms, enforced by overwhelming military superiority, including weapons and space. There's another word for this. It's called empire building. We are the unwitting taxpayers of the first, really, in the history of the world, attempt to establish an empire over the entire face of the globe. That's where we're headed. Now, what about Iraq? Well, it's not surprising. Iraq is the first or the next, depending upon how you look at Afghanistan. It is the next part of implementing this policy. It basically is a specific example of exactly what this national security policy was all about. Finally, this national security policy stated that the United States would prevent any nation from challenging U.S. superpower status. It's a pretty direct challenge to China and Russia and anyone else who would like to think of themselves as an equal of the United States. And it basically says, don't try it, buddy. We got nuclear weapons and we're not afraid to use them. So what has PSR done about some of these things? We have put together packets for our members. This one is the Nuclear Posture Review Resource and Action Kit. It contains all kinds of information, including sample letters to the editor. The letter that's out on the desk in the back, the open letter to President Bush from Physicians for Social Responsibility on Iraq. And has made a major effort to educate the public and the media about what this nuclear posture review really is and the threats that it poses. Similarly, we put together packets on the space-based weapon systems and have made major efforts to lobby Congress. We were very pleased to have over 150 congressmen oppose the authorization for military action in Iraq. We have formed coalitions of other peace groups to apply as much pressure on Congress as possible. We lost that battle, but 150 is a lot better than what we would have had we not been there working on that issue. In May, we had physicians from around the United States, including a delegation from at least 20 from this chapter, the Washington State PSR chapter, lobbying in Congress with senators and congressmen about all these issues. We have had op-eds in papers across the nation, and as I mentioned, we just had a huge meeting in London, and in 3 weeks there'll be another meeting in Washington, D.C., to further publicize this nuclear posture review. Let me focus most of the remaining time on PSR's approach to the attack on Iraq. And as a colleague of mine in PSR pointed out, she said, please refer to this as the attack on Iraq. A war on Iraq, wars can be justified in at least many people's minds, but unilateral attacks are rarely justified. Call it what it is. So what has been our approach on the attack on Iraq? Well, we saw the Bush administration usurp the agenda of Congress on the economy, on education, on pressing social needs, on prescription drugs for the elderly, et cetera, and on the increasing embarrassment that our healthcare system is to this nation, with 44 million uninsured and climbing. All that went by the wayside because Bush was able to focus the agenda on the attack on Iraq. He was able to get the mainline media, which is controlled, as you know, by major corporations, to be the mouthpiece, to create the argument for an attack on Iraq. And they're doing a pretty good job of it. Thank God for the internet. We can get other points of view from other than mainline U.S. media sources. Bush essentially paralyzed Congress all fall with the looming vote on the attack on Iraq and monopolized the agenda. And what was we're seeing from a guy who ain't all that bright, we're seeing an incredibly skillful manipulation of the media, manipulation of public opinion, manipulation of Congress, and controlling of the agenda. And the end result of all of this was a November election that gave both houses to the Republicans, that was a smashing success for Bush. Well, let me just say before I go on about Iraq that I think the tide is turning. I think the fact that we, you guys, and our colleagues out in the street are getting out on the streets and being heard, are writing letters, are talking to our congressmen, and are being more and more vocal in opposition to this attack on Iraq is really starting to sway public opinion. We know that the polls regarding how George Bush is viewed are falling. We know that the support for the attack on Iraq is falling, particularly if it's a unilateral attack by the United States and maybe its sidekick, Tony Blair, without the support of the United Nations. We have been waiting for George Bush to make a political blunder. I was going to say to make a mistake. That's all that he's made is mistakes. But for George Bush to make a political blunder. And I think we're about ready to see it. Even if this war on Iraq or attack on Iraq, quote, goes well, whatever that means, we kill 50,000 instead of 100,000 Iraqis, and not too many Americans in body bags come back, and not too much environmental destruction is created in Iraq, and not too many Arabs and Muslims around the world are encouraged to support terrorism. And inter-tribal, inter-ethnic warfare doesn't break out in Iraq, and there's a fairly smooth transition to a U.S. puppet government, which will have quasi-trappings of democracy. If everything seems to go well, the price is still going to be extremely high. If things don't go well, this could be the end, the beginning of the end of the Bush presidency. We will see. At any rate, I want to go back to what PSR has been doing about the Iraq situation. I went back through my records on Iraq and reminded myself that in February of 1998, when the inspections ended in Iraq and Clinton began a bombing campaign and there was threatening from the administration that it might use weapons of mass destruction against Iraq. I think a lot of us may have forgotten that Clinton was doing his job at being as Bush-like as he could. The International Physicians for Prevention of Nuclear War, which PSR is the U.S. affiliate of, and with the IPPNW shares the 1985 Nobel Peace Prize for educating the world's politicians, media, and public about the dangers of nuclear war. So the IPPNW wrote a letter to President Bush that sounds hauntingly familiar. It says, any attempted military action will have incalculable consequences for peace in the region and for long-term peace in the world. It is the position of IPPNW that no effort should be spared to avoid military conflict and war. We are opposed to the development, possession, and use of all weapons of mass destruction by any nation. IPPNW believes that the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction can only be halted if all nations are committed to disarmament and the peaceful resolution of conflict. All parties that possess these weapons should remove them from areas of potential conflict, declare their intention to never use them, and destroy them. That is still our position. So we are in favor of inspections. But not only inspections in Iraq. We think there should be inspections in Pakistan, in India, in Israel, in England, and in the United States. And we can start 20 miles away with Bangor. Another policy written by my colleague Dave Hall and myself back in those days in 1998 is titled U.S. Policy Toward Iraq Fraught with Unacceptable Consequences, making the same arguments that we're making today. As I said, we lobbied long and hard and effectively, but unfortunately not effectively enough to stop the authorization for use of force in Iraq. PSR, Washington PSR in particular, this chapter in our local community, has been extremely active, really leading the national organization in terms of its vision about peace in the Middle East and in Iraq. Washington PSR has led three trips to Iraq since the spring of 1999. The most recent trip was just in May. The first trip in 1999 sponsored a whole segment in the Seattle PI entitled Life and Death in Iraq, written by Larry Johnson, PI reporter who went with the Washington PSR delegation. This was part of the beginning of the awakening of the people of Seattle to the issues in Iraq, to the effect of sanctions, and to the plight of the Iraqi people. Washington PSR has also visited Israel and Palestine twice. We spent time in the West Bank, spent time in Gaza, and on the second trip, we took Congressman Jim McDermott with us and have badgered him ever since to go to Iraq, and he finally took our advice. And I think he's very proud that he has done so, and we're very proud of him. As we've commented on before, we had a sign-on letter to President Bush back in March of this year talking about containment and intervention in Iraq, opposing military action, stating that all nonviolent solutions must be fully explored, and only then, under international law, could any military action be justified. In other words, under Security Council approval. This letter was signed by over 5,000 physicians and delivered to President Bush and to every member of Congress. Despite all this effort, we weren't making headway. The vote was coming up in October, so the PSR Executive Committee in Washington, D.C. approved a full-page ad in the New York Times on October 4th. It says, PSR says vote no on preemptive war, and lays out the fact that the case has not been made, that there's no clear justification, no American consensus. This forceful statement galvanized a lot of people around the country. We got a tremendous amount of feedback saying, thank God the doctors are standing up on this issue. This ad prompted two more 2 weeks later. I'll share those with you quickly. And these were both in the October 14th edition of the New York Times. You can imagine how pleased I was when I got up that morning and opened the New York Times and found two ads sort of building on what we had started. This one is from our friend and colleague Ben Cohen, who is the founder of Ben & Jerry's. He's a member of the PSR board, and he runs an organization called Business Leaders for Sensible Priorities, a tremendous human being. He says, they're selling war, picture of Rumsfeld, Bush, and Cheney. We're not buying. He says, warning, war will wreck the economy. Warning, war will breed terrorism. Warning, war will discredit America in the world's eyes. Warning, war will take a terrible toll in human life. In the same paper, maybe my favorite newspaper ad of all times, and hopefully many of you saw this. This was by MoveOn.org, Osama, telling us, I want you to invade Iraq. I'm so glad Congress has voted to invade Iraq. Go ahead, send me a new generation of recruits. Your bombs will fuel their hatred of America and their desire for revenge. America won't be safe anywhere. Please attack Iraq. Distract yourself from fighting al-Qaeda. Divide the international community. Go ahead, destabilize the region. Maybe Pakistan will fall. We want its nuclear weapons. Give Saddam a reason to strike first. He might draw Israel into a fight. Perfect. So please, invade Iraq. Make my day. This ad made my day. PSR in November was one of the key organizations founding a mainstream effort to oppose the war. This was called the Win Without War campaign. We were concerned that the peace movement, as it always begins in the more radical elements of society, was being viewed as irrelevant by the mainstream. It was certainly being written off by the media. We felt that if we could get organizations and we together that were more mainstream, that we could mobilize more people for demonstrations, that we could mobilize more public opinion against the war. So we put together a coalition with the Fourth Freedom Forum, the National Council of Churches, Working Assets, the Sierra Club, the NAACP now, and formed a mainstream coalition that has been very active in the demonstrations in D.C. and across the country. We need to make the anti-war movement a middle-class, moderate, mainstream event supported by the majority of the American people, and that's the purpose of what we're trying to do. Many of us in this audience are visionaries and don't need to be bought along as part of the mainstream, but Congress listens to the mainstream. Bush doesn't listen to anybody. God tells him what to do, and there's not much we can do there. So what is PSR's approach to foreign policy versus that of the Bush administration? Well, I've told you about the Bush administration's approach. It's to militarize space. It's to develop new weapons, directed lasers, microwaves that can be shot from a mile away, directed at a truck that fries the truck's ignition system and stops it dead in its tracks. Cluster bombs, we saw a little bit of this in Afghanistan, got a little peek at some of these weapons. Incendiary weapons that create tremendous overpressure and tremendous heat, burn and vaporize anything in the area. And basically through these weapons of destruction, mass and otherwise, intends to oppose the Bush administration's version of morality and good and evil on the rest of the world. That's a pretty impressive foreign policy. It certainly is clear. Physicians for Social Responsibility feels very strongly that the issues that threaten the existence of mankind are all issues that transcend international boundaries. The existence of weapons of mass destruction, the fact that there are global threats to public health from the environment, from global warming, from pollution, CO2 in the atmosphere, clean air, clean water. These things know no national boundaries. And we feel that the way to deal with these problems is to support international agreements, to support international law, rather than exempt yourself from the International Criminal Court, as the Bush National Security Strategy, which I mentioned, clearly lays out. We will not subject ourselves nor be subjected to the imposition of the will of an international criminal court so that we can do what we want. We feel that international organizations and international government, the United Nations, is the best shot we have at living in a peaceful and prosperous world for all the people on Earth. We support you, the UN Association, and those of you who are working to strengthen the UN. We're there with you. We envision a world where we realize that we're interdependent. We realize that we're all interconnected, intimately interconnected, spiritually interconnected, that it doesn't matter if we're a Kenyan or a German or an American or an Iraqi, that we all have the same yearnings, we all have the same aspirations for our children, and we all have the same basic needs. And these basic needs are not being met. One of the reasons they're not being met is that the industrialized Western world, led by the United States, is consuming way more than its share of natural resources. And the World Trade Organization, world trade isn't a good or a bad thing. It's a fact. World trade exists. But the World Trade Organization has been pretty effective at extracting resources from the third world and feeding the appetites of the industrialized world. And some more equitable distribution of the world's resources is absolutely essential to maintain and establish world peace and the sense of community that we need to have. So PSR's approach toward foreign policy is one of collaboration, discussion, working through established mechanisms like the United Nations, strengthening the United Nations through reform. We believe in enforcing all the resolutions of the Security Council, not just selective ones that appeal to narrow American self-interest at the moment. And there are a lot of Security Council resolutions that America just chooses to totally ignore. So it's an image of two different worlds, really. One, the world that George Bush sees for us is a Pax Americana imposed by force from the world's lone superpower, who will do everything it can to maintain its superpower status. We know where that ends. Empires never exist forever. And this one will end as sorry and sad as all other empires ended at some point. Versus a vision shared by those who support the United Nations that we are a world community, that our problems transcend national borders and need international solutions. Just as we view the evolution of human society from tribal states into nation states, we realize that tribal mentality doesn't get us anywhere. It gets us a massacre in Rwanda of the Hutus by the Tutsis, or the Tutsis by the Hutus. I forget which way it was, but it was unbelievably tragic. The same mentality exists in nation states. It's just magnified. And really, for humanity to survive in this globe, the concept of the nation state needs to fade away in importance. And Bush is taking us in the opposite direction, obviously. The United Nations embodies this world community and world government and world approach to problems that we need to see. I would like to close with one of my favorite quotes from the great Martin Luther King. One of the highlights of my life was being a freshman in college at Penn State University in 1964, and with about 5,000 other students crammed into the basketball auditorium, I got to hear Martin Luther King speak. And it was one of those moments in my life where the light bulb went off up here. I'd gone to college that year wearing a Barry Goldwater for President button. My parents were good, solid Republicans. My dad ran a manufacturing plant in our small town in Pennsylvania. And Martin Luther King was the beginning of my awakening. And 4 years later, I had gotten myself out of Navy ROTC instead of into a jet flying off of a carrier in Vietnam, and was on the steps of the Washington Memorial demonstrating against the Vietnam War. So I had a great transition. Martin Luther King was a major instigator. So a few words from one of the great human beings to have lived in my lifetime. Nonviolence is the answer to the crucial political and moral questions of our time. And this is in the handout that you all have. The need for man to overcome oppression and violence without resorting to oppression and violence. Is that logical or what? We pretty much have got to overcome oppression and violence without resorting to it and trying to overcome it. Seems to make a lot of sense. Man must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method is love. I refuse to accept the cynical notion that nation after nation must spiral down a militaristic stairway into the hell of nuclear destruction. I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. Let's continue to try to share Martin Luther King's vision for the globe. I know that the UN Association and PSR and many of the other organizations that you all belong to are, in fact, working hard to do that. Finally, I encourage you to visit the PSR desk in the back as you join the UNA. Also pick up a brochure and join PSR. Just think of the P as standing for people as well as physicians. Thank you very much.